Hello, I'm Susan Flory. This is The Big Middle, my podcast about the big issues of longer midlife. This is where we reject ageism and embrace our good fortune. Older doesn't mean over. We begin with this quotable quote. What if we looked at our aging population not as a problem, but as an army of experienced social problem solvers? It's from my guest, author Marcy Alberher, former career columnist at the New York Times, current vice president at Encore.org. That's an American nonprofit mobilizing that midlife problem solvers army and taking it global. Thanks for coming on The Big Middle, Marcy.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Susan. I'm a big fan of your work. I've been following The Big Middle, and it's very necessary right now.
Oh, isn't it just? Thanks so much. And what about that quote then?
So, you know, I've been saying that for a long time, but I think in true honesty, I think I was inspired by a board member and mentor of mine, Ellen Goodman, the Pulitzer Prize winning journalist. And I believe she's the one who first talked about that army of problem solvers. And it's really stuck with me. So I want to give credit where credit is due.
Yes. And as we all know, there's no end of social problems, enough to have several armies on the case.
No end of social problems and actually no end to the growing aging population. So yes, I think those two things are matching up.
Yeah, it's a renewable resource in both directions.
Right.
So we all know, those of us that have been paying attention, the size and the shape of the so-called problem. And we've got over 60s outnumbering under 18s in much of the world. The advent of the 100-year life, which means 60-year careers, not work for 30, retire for 30. Encore.org is leading the way with this army of social problem solvers. Tell us the very many ways that you're doing this.
What we're trying to do is kind of change the culture in a lot of different ways. So a lot of the work I focus on is about changing the narrative. So what is it like to tell a different story of older people as assets rather than older people as having needs all the time? I mean, of course, as we age, we do have needs, but we also need to talk about what we bring to the table and what we can do in our later chapters. We also focus on fostering innovation and cultivating leaders. And on the innovation front, we run innovation prizes. We're trying to catalyze activity for people who are incubating new models for what it is like to live in these new life stages. And we support leaders around the world and around the U.S. who are working on these issues of thinking about how we can make a more old than young society work for all of us.
Well, take us through some of your programs, starting with Gen to Gen.
Sure. So our big signature effort right now is called Gen to Gen, and it is a 5-year campaign to mobilize adults over 50 to show up and stand up for young people. It involves everything from volunteer efforts to becoming a mentor to also working in intergenerational ways and taking on new roles in youth-serving organizations or in organizations where you are age-integrating a workforce team.
Do you find people come to you, people who already have an interest in this? I mean, how do you promote these various projects?
So we work with NGOs. It's mostly in the U.S., but we work with, we have, 200 partners in this campaign right now. These are big NGOs who are really trying to rethink what it means to take advantage of the talents of the over 50 population and to think about new ways to engage older people with young people. So as an example, let's say it's a mentoring organization whose model is to match mentors who are probably recent college grads or college students with high school students or younger people needing mentors. So we might work with an organization like that to get them thinking about what would it be like to tap the over 50 population, which brings some very different skills to influencing young people.
I mean, we know that the fact that you can be discarded as a worker while you're in your 2019 prime, your 50s, 60s, even your 40s these days, it's so worrying and it takes all who experience it by surprise. How are you telling that story at Encore, the bigger story of what's ahead for younger people? Because they're still being fed these fantasy scenarios of golden years of retirement leisure.
Right. So I think a couple of things. One thing that's been so interesting about the Gen to Gen campaign is it's a really interesting way to get young people involved in this work. So we partner with many youth serving organizations. Well, guess who works at those organizations? often it's a lot of younger people. So we find that there's now a lot of younger advocates who care about this issue, who see what it's like to work alongside older people and to work as, you know, in solidarity with older people. And I found lately I'm meeting more and more young leaders working in this movement. So I think that's an enormous change we're seeing right now. It's early days, but it's quite promising.
There's much research out there, as we know, Marcy, showing that across the board, losing a job in your 50s can ruin you financially, often permanently. There's much talk of retraining midlifers who are pushed out of jobs, but that doesn't tell the entire story of what's happening. Do you agree that for many over 50s, it isn't lack of skills or knowledge about how things work in a particular sector? It's this unprecedented industrial disruption that we're all experiencing, and entrenched ageism on the part of corporates, and, you know, an incredible lack of awareness of the fact that we're having a social revolution now, and many are ignoring it at their peril.
I have to agree with you. The appearance of your podcast is a really interesting moment here. We need more conversation about what's happening. And I think the thing I could say is heartening is that I really do think there is a bubbling up. I'm sure you saw it, but last week, one of the number one most emailed articles on the New York Times website was this article about women over 70, the power of women over 70. It came from an awards show here in the U.S. and from Nancy Pelosi in Congress. These are the cultural conversations that affect us. And I think we need more of that. And at the same time, we're also seeing a huge conversation about older people who are not living up to what they should be doing as older people. I think if you followed the Brexit conversation and some of the conversations about the elections, recent elections in the U.S., there's a lot of talk about older people not voting in the interests of younger people. And I think we could do better as older people. So I think there's a bunch of different dynamics going on here. And I think one of the best ways we're going to combat ageism is get the generations to partner together on ways to create a world that allows all of us to thrive. So if we can get people in closer proximity to each other, if older and younger people were partnering at work, and if older and younger people were partnering on social change effort, and if older and younger people live side by side rather than often living in segregated neighborhoods, all of these things would help reduce the stereotypes, give us more exposure to each other. I'm very aware of age discrimination, but I do like to point out that it can run both ways, and older people can sometimes be discounting what younger people bring to the table.
No, and they bring so much, don't they? I mean, the age segregation element of our societies, even all first world countries are experiencing this, and this is a social construct. We didn't have this 100 years ago. You know, now we're those of us who are aware that we need to foster this sort of intergenerational connection are looking at all of the ways we can model, you know, to have nurseries and care homes and get everybody mixing it up so everybody can have the learning exchange that we used to have when families weren't scattered all around the world, disconnected.
Right. So we could do it in our homes. We could do it in our neighborhoods. We could do it in our higher ed institutions. So as we, you know, higher ed institutions should be recruiting all of us at all stages of life for the constant re-education and retraining we need to stay relevant, to stay connected, and to have an impact.
Are you working at all with the WHO? Because they're sort of leading campaigns of a global nature to try to foster this sort of development, this redesign of the structures that are out of sync with the revolution.
We're very much in favor of with the work that's being done at the WHO. And in many global institutions are waking up to the reality that we need to have more innovative models. A lot of the work we do is really supporting kind of scrappy innovators who are testing out new models for housing, new models for community, community ideas to bring the generations into more contact with each other. So we think if we can get people to be thinking about this in all kinds of spheres, that we can start a new kind of social revolution to change the story here.
You're in New York, Marcy, one of the two American hubs of Encore.org. And the second's in San Francisco?
Yes. Yes.
Now, I'm in London, and I'm very excited because one of your signature programs, the Encore Fellowship, it's coming here as soon as, a couple of months?
Yes. You know, so many of our programs have taken hold around the globe. The Purpose Prize, which is our Prize for Social Entrepreneurs Over the Age of 60 was picked up in Germany last year. So this is common for us that our programs are either emulated or picked up in other countries. And yes, the next to happen will be Encore Fellows coming to the UK. And that's our model for bringing a new stream of talent into the social sector, into NGOs and government agencies. So what we find is a lot of people later in life, whether or not they worked in the social sector before, are very interested in doing this kind of high impact social change work later in their careers. So our fellowship is a one-year fellowship designed to help people who are trying to bring their experience to the social sector. And it's almost as if it's an internship for older people, a chance to, you know, get exposed to a new kind of organization, yet to use skills that have been built up often through decades of work experience.
And so it facilitates entry, which is the big obstacle, because I know when I lost my job mid-50s. The radio network in Switzerland was privatized. And I really did think I had all the time in the world to do what I wanted. You know, money wasn't an issue. And I thought, I'm going to take a course for a year, really expensive course on architectural interior design. And then I'll pick up wherever I want. I have skills, I can travel with them. And I applied to a lot of nonprofits, cancer charities, which is something I've always worked in. Not an interview, not even an informational interview. They just weren't interested. And if I pushed, well, you don't have any experience. I said, yeah, but I've been fundraising for charities for such a long time. Oh, yes, yes. But, you know, the day to day, we need people that are actually in the industry, which is maybe a UK closed mindset. I think maybe in the States, you're more open to people, you know, switching it up.
Not so sure. Not so sure. This is exactly the reason that we started the Encore Fellowships. It is just like the way young people need internships so they can get the experience that's needed for the job they want. The same is true for middle people. So what we decided is we needed to create a fellowship that's a pathway, an on-ramp to this kind of new stage of work that you are exactly identifying. So you are not alone in having the experience you had. We've now placed 2,000 fellows in these fellowships all over the U.S., and we're really excited that the model is being exported because we think it will translate quite well.
That's 2,000 over how many years?
Oh, over about 9 years.
Oh, fantastic. So if I want to become an Encore Fellow, if I want to access the program in a couple of months when it launches, where can I be first in line? How can I put my name down?
Well, I would say go to Encore.org and sign up for our regular newsletters. We don't mail too often, usually about once a month, and we announce all our programs there, and you can follow. You can also follow us on social media at Encore.org or me at Hey Marcy, H-E-Y-M-A-R-C-I. We're active on all the social media channels, so that's a great way to keep up and keep up the news. But I have a feeling, Susan, you will keep up with that program, and maybe you'll have another guest who's able to talk about that in person.
Yes, of course. You're helping me line up your boss, your colleague, Mark Friedman. He's going to be on the show in a couple of weeks. How
exactly.
To live forever and mix the generations up.
And Mark is on a whirlwind tour right now for that book. So if you go to our website or go to howtoliveforever.org, you can see if you could catch him in a city near you because he's a really dynamic speaker.
Yes, absolutely. I've enjoyed some of the videos that I've seen of him. What does success look like for Encore.org? You've had, you know, 2,000 fellows in 9 years. What does it look like in the near future for you?
That's a great question. You know, we envision a world where, you know, age diversity is part of the diversity conversation, a routine part of that conversation, where we have new models for what it looks like to have 4 or even 5 generations working together at work, where there are all kinds of models for age integration in housing, in higher education, in all kinds of ways in the communities that we inhabit, and where this is a really trending topic, and where we hear less about the talk of a gray tsunami and a growing wave of older people who are going to be dependent, but a growing wave of older people who are going to be available to solve social problems, influence the next generation, and improve the world, and use their skills, their life accumulated skills. So we're a long way from that reality, but I think we have a lot of the right pieces in place to get there.
What would be fantastic is if we could switch everything around, redesign our society, because it is us who have crafted society, and culture change, as we know, is fluid. It'd be great if we could be age agnostic, if we could celebrate every birthday as much as we did when we were little kids.
Yeah, I wonder if it's age agnostic or age accepting. You know, I think we are different at every age. So it's a little bit like when people say colorblind or race blind. Like, I don't think we should necessarily, I think we can acknowledge what is different as we age, but why not celebrate what is uniquely, you know, what each generation brings to the table, what are the gifts we have that increase with age, but also, you know, understand that some things are hard when we age, just as some aspects of being young are hard.
Well, I take your point completely then. Age accepting then, that's a really good one. And then that's the other thing. We don't want to be Pollyanna about it, because I'm quite tired of seeing all these articles where, oh, she's 83 and she's, you know, all these outliers. And then people in their 60s and 70s, you know, we're all aging differently and we all don't have to do extreme sports.
Exactly. There is no need to be a superhero. I think that's another kind of pressure that we can step away from.
Is there anything in particular about age discrimination that really makes your blood boil?
I think there's sometimes a bit of a blame that goes into it, where we blame ourselves for behaving in certain ways, for not being with the times, or having a senior moment, or not being as fast as we used to. And I think we should step away from beating ourselves up and realize that a lot of these things are societal pressures, and that we have, you know, forgetful moments at every age of life. We, you know, misplace our keys, however old we are. So I think the roles that that we play in our own self-deprecation are an interesting, you know, aspect of ageism to look at.
Well, we can applaud the work of anti-ageism activist Ashton Applewhite, because she sensitized all of us and she continues to do it in such a wonderfully efficient and way full of humor. And that's much of what she says, too. We can't blame ourselves for internalizing the messages of decades, because that's all we've been hearing. We've been bombarded with all of these messages about how we're going to be having senior moments from the minute we're 51.
Yeah, I mean, I've learned so much from Ashton, and I also learned so much from having friends and colleagues older and younger. And I think we should all kind of make it our business to collect friendships and work colleagues and mentors up and down the generations. And I think that's just another easy thing we can do to try to start changing the story in our own lives.
And we can volunteer if we don't have immediate access to younger people and don't find it easy to strike up friendships, let's say at the gym or something. You could volunteer for a particular youth movement or maybe help out at a school.
Easiest way to do it. And lots of ideas at the Gen to Gen website, by the way. If you go to imgentogen.org, we have been collecting both organizations that are seeking volunteers for people to work with young people, but also ideas for things you can do and create within your own community if you're that type.
How has your work affected your own expectations about your aging?
So on the work front, the single biggest impact it's had on me is this constant desire to learn and to remain relevant and to stay current, even when it might be tempting to coast sometimes. So I do think that's something that I feel pretty strongly about, and the work has definitely affected me. The other way it's affected me, though, is when I joined Encore, I was in my 40s and I worked with quite a lot of people who were in their 60s and 70s, and it changed my view of what it meant to be older, because I saw all of these really powerful people and I wanted to be them, and you'd never had that feeling before.
So it took the pressure off you.
It took the pressure off, but also proximity makes a huge difference. So I now try to inhabit that role when I'm around younger people. And I try to, you know, when I see a younger friend or family member who's panicking about turning 30 or 40, it's so easy for me to be the person who says, hey, it's okay. It's going to be okay. You know, I'm at the other end. And, you know, so that's why another reason why it's so important to have people around you ahead and behind in the aging game, because we're all on this. We're all on the escalator together.
And we can gently encourage people who say all the time when you're out in the streets and, oh, well, how old are you? I'm older than you. And, oh, you don't look your age. And we could just maybe gently coax them out of that sort of observation.
Yeah. This is, you know, I'm a big part of the Claim Your Age movement, where, you know, every year I have a big birthday party and I announce my age and I say it proudly and I convince my mom to start doing the same. And she comes from a generation where that wasn't what a woman did very comfortably. So I get really excited when I can get someone else on that bandwagon.
I have to say, Marcy, I loved your LinkedIn learning course on second act careers. It's really good, excellent advice, clearly presented. That's only been up for a couple of months. Are you getting a lot of positive feedback about it?
Yes, we really are. And it was a really interesting learning moment for me to do that course because when I was approached by LinkedIn and I realized this is how people are learning today and I needed to get on the bandwagon and learn, how do you do something like that? How do you get involved in video learning as a presenter? So that was this new thing I was learning, even as the content of what I was teaching had a lot to do with encouraging other people to embrace a new form of learning. So it was kind of circular there.
Well, what's lovely is because it's digestible bites and, you know, it's just like listening to a podcast. I actually caught about five of them while I was emptying the dishwasher.
Yes, my favorite time for podcasts when I listen to the Big Middle and others is when I'm taking walks, when I'm cooking. Laundry is another great one. So I think that's a healthy kind of multitasking.
Marcy Alberher, Vice President, Strategic Communications at Encore.org. Thank you so much, Marcy.
My absolute pleasure, Susan.
Marcy is the author of the Encore Career Handbook and several others and has just done that excellent course on how to carve out an Encore career. You can find that on LinkedIn Learning. I'll have another inspirational interview for you about midlife on The Big Middle in a week. As ever, links to all in the show notes. Thanks so much for your kind reviews as well, and thanks for listening. Until next time, bye-bye.